8. Some voices wanted Amund frozen. The streak ship was being fueled and provisioned, and he had minutes to prepare for a quick trip to the ship's port, and after that, a sudden introduction to his fellow crew members. But friends and strangers had to approach him before he left the Highlands. Using confident voices, they advised him to step inside a cold bottle. None of them had any first-hand experience with spaceflight, much less alien desires. But they promised that his life would be spared at the end of this adventure, and did he want to waste his youth living inside a streak ship? His ex-lover was particularly adamant. The voyage was sure to be dull, and he really should freeze himself for both journeys, out and back again. But she didn't go so far as promising to wait for him, ludicrous as that would be. Instead, she offered a fetching look, saying,
"I'll have a daughter or two by then, and I know they'll be eager to meet the most famous human ever born in the Highlands."
Those were the last human words spoken to Amund's face. When he reached the Port Alpha, a few low-ranking machines took the trouble to offer the same advice. Deep space was full of obstacles. One shard of comet could slip past his streak ship's defenses, and the impact would slow their trajectory by several hundred meters a second. And when that happened, the liquid bodies inside would continue forward at several hundred meters every second. Thrown against the walls, Amund would be turned into dead goo. Nobody wanted that. Sleep through the journey out. Enjoy a fine adventure on the target world, and then you're free of this ridiculous obligation, they told him. Another good sleep. Get swaddled in kinetic buffers, and who's bigger than you when you come home? And all those pretty girls waiting, no doubt. Amund listened to every word, but what he heard were the selfish fears. These machines didn't want their human wasted, and they certainly didn't want to lose the 4 new worlds that his tiny death was going to buy. Washin never mentioned cold bottles, and perhaps she didn't know what her officers were suggesting. Her last moments with Amund were spent introducing the 2-person crew, then, with warm touches, reiterating her boundless appreciation for what one nobleman was doing. Rococo never brought up the topic of freezing anyone. What mattered was boasting about his infinite skills as a diplomat and how he would face down the rivers.
"Saving a young man's life," he said.
Except he didn't say,
"Saving a graying, half-spent man's life."
Did he? In a day jammed with the unforeseen, the greatest surprise was Mir. So tiny next to the captains and diplomats and everyone else. So plainly, ridiculously different. Amund didn't think of her as pretty. Yet he couldn't stop staring at the little face that looked starved because it was starved. This body and those enormous, bottomless eyes were born on a crippled starship. Amund heard that story. With a rush of words, Rococo told how she crashed on an alien world where she was tormented like a demon and worshipped like a god. Mir was human only in the most glancing fashion, but wait, she wasn't human. Amund forgot what was obvious. This was another immortal machine who couldn't be trusted. Those wrong eyes were full of sympathy, or she was pretending to care. Either way, she offered very few words. No talk about cold bottles or her thanks for his sacrifice or even the particulars of the mission. She just took hold of him, her hand hot and his hand suddenly feeling cold. Mir gripped him just enough to prove her unnatural strength, and then she smiled in the saddest fashion, confessing,
"I like very little about this mission, just so you understand."
Mir wasn't beautiful, but gods didn't have to wear beauty. It was enough that they were powerful, ageless entities, deserving adoration and long stares, and any mortal would be stupid not to be thrilled to live in their shadows. The low-ranking machines were the ones that argued for the cold bottle. Those would-be deities were scrambling for anything that smelled like power.
We're going to save you, they promised, as if they had any role in future events.
A kidney, a hand. You give the rivers a gift, and they let the rest of you return home again. You won't be half a year older, and then you're the young hero leading your people to the new world.
How simple stupid did they think he was? No bottles, he told them emphatically, and just once. The entities had perfect recall, after all. Let them remember the words and his blatant scorn.
I'm going to live a few years, and then I'll die one way or another, he said. But you're not fooling me into hope, because there isn't any hope. And that's the same for all of you. Machines don't run forever, no matter how much you try to fool yourself.
The voyage proved even more grueling than expected. Regardless of painkillers and cushions, the hard acceleration made Amund ache, and each new day was desperate to repeat every day that came before. The ship's mess could generate any food, but he usually ate the same reliable meals. He knew where he would lie down and what he would think about when he let his mind wander, and for those early months, Amund thought about ex-lovers and the cavern that had seemed so tiny until he came to live here. Those left behind people were obviously thinking about him. Good wishes kept arriving, and there were some elaborate, intimate messages buried among the clichés. Responding to everybody was tedious, and he gave up that chore soon enough. But a few people received his thanks, along with observations about a dreary life inside a machine-infested closet, and sure enough, that honesty helped diminish the inflow until a week might pass without noise from home. One of the later messages was memorable. A girl who Amund had never met sent him a long video of herself. She resembled Mir, undersized and big-eyed. But she was also a child through and through, and a youngster's enthusiasm was on display. Grinning, she told him that she had studied the river's video very closely, the same video shown to everybody in the highland. She realized that Amund saw only a few moments before he ran downstairs to volunteer.
Everybody knows your story, she said.
But the rest of the video was far, far more impressive.
Don't you think so?
Of course, the living rivers weren't rivers. They were more like trees, and the bulk of every tree was hidden underground. The dense, super-salted gel didn't stop at the ocean. The aliens reached across the continental shelves after rising from the depths, and they glowed as they moved, feeding on volcanic seams and microbes and sunlight brought from above. That was the spectacle worth seeing. Not the ordinary business on land, but on the ocean floor. That was what she would see, if she could. And she only hoped that Amund had time and the opportunity to experience that very wonderful paradise for himself. Amund had never bothered to watch the full video. Inspired by the enthusiasm, he took the challenge and felt impressed, but not as odd as his new friend sounded. No, she was what impressed him.
You seem like such a bright, excited person, he told her in his reply. My advice? Get the fuck out of that cavern. Go out and live anywhere else that will take you.
That message went home, and after that, nobody called to him. Which was perhaps what Amund wanted all along. It was impossible to guess what his companions would talk about on any day, or even inside a single minute. Topics varied widely, crazily, often shifting in mid-sentence. But Amund knew that he wouldn't understand much, and the subject's importance would evade him. Yet that ridiculous noise became a reliable joy in a small, painful life. Two gods shooting the shit, and sometimes, now and again, offering up words that fascinated the human in their midst. Those gods weren't having sex. But Rococo's lust was aimed at Mir's blatant indifference, and his frustration was another reliable joy. Maybe all that would change when they reached the rivers. an entire world as their playground, and out of sight of the doomed man, the gods would take their pleasures by any and all means. Imagining sex with Mir. That was another trusted pleasure. She was a wise god who didn't want Rococo, and of course she didn't have desires for a mortal beast like Amund. Mir had lived happily among aliens. She even married a few of them. This female deity seemed capable of any perversion, which meant that she was saving herself for the rivers. Her next husband was a 10,000-kilometer ribbon, and how could anything as small and ordinary as Rococo feel reason to be optimistic? But freed from hope, Amund could spin endless fantasies about the god machine. Not a terrible fate, all in all. Then the rivers started to murder each other. An entire world was burning, and that's when Amund honestly contemplated the cold bottle. Suspend his life, and with him unaware, they would land beside the first street ship. That vessel was safe enough, protected by hyperfiber and aggressive banks of defensive lasers, two features missing from their minimal ship. Frozen, Amund would endure one kind of dreamless non-existence, and if he woke again, they would be approaching the great ship, most of his life left to be lived. Except he never mentioned the bottle, and the others didn't offer. The following times were interesting and awful. Morning began with breakfast and premonitions of disaster. A comet shard was about to strike their thin, low-mass hull. Amund knew it, and later, he was equally sure that a nuclear weapon would meet them. The sense of doom gave each moment its spark, and every minute crossed felt like victory. And the human was surprisingly fond of this new life, fear-churning emotions while his thoughts kept bending in fresh, peculiar ways. He didn't waste neurons dwelling on bottles or his left-behind life. It was an endless, secret joy to stretch out on the padded mattress, watching gods struggle with events beyond their control, maybe beyond their understanding. 100 million kilometers out, Mir looked at him and then looked away, telling the wall,
"Bottle time."
Bombs and the need to make hard maneuvers left no choice. Amund had to be frozen and wrapped in protective garb, then loaded with the rest of the essentials inside the crash vault. He was one kind of dead when the ship suffered a string of attacks, and the vault was on the ground, and the hyperfiber door was blown clear. The defrosting took hours, his last breath still inside the soft pink lungs. Alien air was allowed past preset filters, and a wardrobe of smart clothing swaddled him, helping lift his temperature to happy human norms. A fiercely hot hand touched his forehead. A mother's gesture, and Amund recoiled. Mir said his name.
"Who?"
he asked. The vast eyes blinked, startled.
"Who are you?"
he asked. But he couldn't fool the tiny god. She laughed, warming him with her gentle pleasure. Then, with a minimum of sentences and a few hopeful nods of her head, she explained what had to be done if they were going to survive.
"Wait,"
Amund interrupted. She stopped talking.
"The old deal is shit, isn't it?"
"And there's no good reason to slaughter you,"
she teased. Rococo was standing close, but not standing with them. The man obviously wanted to add his genius to the conversation, but he managed to keep his machine tongue quiet.
"If we go home," Amund said to Mir.
"If?"
she agreed.
"I want a ride inside the bottle." "With the rest of your days ahead," Rococo interjected.
The man was unlikable, but Amund nodded as if those were the wisest words ever spoken, and then he did what he had never done before. One of his cold hands reached out, touching smooth, hot skin and the very sharp cheekbones of a face that couldn't be more amazing.
"That's not why," he told Mir.
No?
She asked. No, he confessed. I just want the chance to stop thinking about you. 9. I'm looking forward to sleeping with you.
Those words were buried inside the noise about protecting them. But having said them, Amund didn't repeat himself, not even in the most tangential, cursory fashion. That first night, after their kit provided dinner, the three of them sat on the open deck. Nobody spoke. The only noise was the groaning and creaking of the giant beneath them. Amund never mentioned sleeping arrangements. Mir watched the tired face and the man's bent posture, noticing how the left hand rubbed the right elbow. That joint was giving him trouble. Arthritis, perhaps. The backpack was heavy, yet he had carried it down to the river. The kit could synthesize any substance, and that's why she opened the pack and verbally walked it through a menu of archaic compounds. Pink tabs of salicylic acid and sugar were delivered, and Mir studied the mortal once again. A creature of water and passion, and so far removed from simple. The medicine remained inside her tiny hand. Standing, Mir said nothing. From the corner of an eye, she saw Rococo watching her slow walk. Maybe Amund watched her too. She didn't look back at the man. She was done trying to decipher him. The sun was nearly set when she entered the cabin that Amund had already chosen. His boots were waiting inside the door, self-cleaned and new heels generated for the next hike. The room was dark and felt small and smelled a little like blood agar. She left the door open. A woven bed was waiting in the back corner, the mattress pulpy and soft and just a little damp, and it would be awful sleeping. Mir wondered if she could ask their protector to speak to the river, give the creature a little helpful instruction about making people comfortable. Entering the cabin, Amund was greeted by soft laughter. To the blackness, he said, "Hello."
"Here,"
she answered. He closed the door, and that was all he did for the time being. Standing opposite her, Amund was breathing loudly enough to be heard over the creaking river. The lack of windows did nothing to isolate them. Every motion beneath them was felt, the twitches and shivers and the rising sensation as they were carried aloft, accelerating downstream. Mir shivered out of fatigue and fear, and then she laughed once again, louder this time.
"What's funny?" Amund asked.
He still stood beside the closed door. Two thin lines of starlight managed to slip past. Mir's eyes had totally adapted, but mortals had lousy night vision. And Amund wasn't young anymore.
"You and the river," she said. "The two of you were having a conversation on the hillside."
Her companion shifted his weight from one leg to the other.
"While we were being useless, you and it were achieving important diplomatic overtures."
"She."
"Okay. She."
Amund took one blind step forward.
"I have something for you,"
Mir said. The river shuddered and creaked, but the larger sound was a deep breath being taken and then held.
"Medicine,"
she said.
"For your elbow."
"Is that what you did in the kit?"
"Yes."
Amund didn't speak.
"What did you think I was doing?"
"Making poison," he said. "Or some kind of madness pill, you know, so you can enslave my will and all."
Interesting, paranoid ideas.
"I wish I'd thought of that,"
she said. Amund broke out laughing, but not for long and not hard. Then he crossed the room until his feet blindly hit hers.
Sorry, he said.
For what part of this?
The man sat beside Mir, but a good deal of the bed was between them.
She and I talked, sure. She told me what she thinks about you, and Rococo. She was ready to kill both of you just as soon as she thought of the best way.
But you stopped her.
He didn't respond.
You saved us.
He sighed.
Apparently so.
Hold out your hand,
Mir said. Amund reached for the voice, and she grabbed his hand with her empty hand. His skin was cool and damp, rather like the bed was cool and damp. But she suspected that Amund would make a far more comfortable mattress. Mir held three of his fingers inside her five. He pulled back until he felt pressure, and then he relaxed.
If I say no to sex, she said.
He said,
well?
He said nothing.
Open your mouth,
she said. His face was in profile, and in that very poor light, Mir saw the mouth obey her command, his entire body alert and blind and very hopeful. She dropped two pills onto the tongue.
Sweet, he said.
You're right. It's poison, she said. And it takes only 40 years to work.
Then Amund was laughing, and not quietly. He laughed until he sobbed, and Mir wasn't certain when she began to chuckle at some of this or all of this. Sitting like that, they stayed awake half the night, gradually moving closer on the unappealing mattress, and Mir kept hold of those three fingers while both of them pulled reasons to laugh out of nothing at all. 10. Amund was making love to one god when a second god called to him. He didn't dress or bother to let his erection die. A happy fleck of naked water, he hurried off to speak with the river. This would be a pivotal conversation. He had that sense from the beginning, and the human felt a little omniscient when his premonition came true. Among her many promises, the river claimed that they would reach the coast tomorrow, around midday, and the waiting streak ship wasn't far beyond the horizon. Great news was heaped on top of great news. Amund practiced what he would say first, and next, and last. Returning to the non-boat, the human was wishing that smiles could be infinite. How enormous would his face and mouth have to be to capture this transcendent joy? Then he noticed the two gods standing behind the railing. They watched him, and Amund let his finite face drop for a moment, watching his bare feet crossing the blue flesh. Then he looked up again. Mir and Rococo were standing close to one another, perhaps a little closer than before. Amund was still in an exceptionally good mood, and Mir was smiling too. But at Rococo, and not just politely smiling. Humans, genuine mortal humans, were less than brilliant. But even ordinary middle-aged men had the innate genius to find the meaning in faces. Amund looked at those faces. Tenderness and acceptance and a new chain of possibilities were on display, and he saw the future. Those two machines were going to sleep together. Suddenly, the highest, frothiest portions of Amund's joy were being shaved away. That was what the revelation did to him. Amund was jubilant, and then he wasn't. He was the pinnacle of history for untold billions, and then, without losing that gift, he became another lover for a woman who might have 1,000 husbands before her life and soul were obliterated on some alien world. Amund didn't know what to do next. He felt as if he was watching himself finish the walk, one hand grabbing the railing and his body climbing on board with as much grace as possible, each piece of him acting of its own accord. He was responsible for nothing, including what he said to the others.
A pleasant day, his voice allowed.
but not Amund. Amund was a ghost trapped behind the flesh and behind the words, as surprised as anyone when he entered the toilet room and closed the door, one hand and then the other slowly rubbing the face that still couldn't put an end to the endless smile. 3 minutes, and he stepped back into the sun. Rococo was standing at the bow. The non-boat was moving again, sliding down a long slope fast enough that the machine had to tilt a little bit forward, leaning against the wind. But Mir had disappeared. Amund looked in her cabin first, but she wasn't there. What if she was waiting inside Rococo's cabin? That's what Amund saw, in his mind. She was lying on Rococo's bed, waiting for a god, which was exactly what she deserved. Amund waited for jealousy to take hold. He was hoping for ugly emotions, something to give the next moments even more importance. But even when he was convinced that Mir had abandoned him, he couldn't find any useful anger or need for vengeance. To himself, he muttered,
"What makes a god?"
Power, vast and deadly, but also capable of great accomplishments. Amund pushed open the door of his cabin. Mir had returned to bed, and she was naked again. What had been her clothes had formed blankets across the damp, fleshy mattress. She smiled at Amund and sat up a little more, starting to speak and then thinking better of it. What did she notice in his face?
Probably more than he would ever tease out of her face. "Four gods," he said. She blinked.
"What's that?"
"Sorry, nothing."
Amund offered the apology, but he meant it. Four gods were present, but it just so happened that one of the deities had only a few hours remaining, and then he would be nothing but a mortal man again. The non-boat twisted slightly, and sunlight fell through the open and over the naked woman. So scrawny, so odd. She was a stick with tiny breasts and the wrong eyes, and Amund wondered why he had ever cared so much about sex with that creature. Then in the next instant, he wanted to throw himself on top of her and take her until he was exhausted. Which was what he should do, he told himself, because this could well be the last time for this sort of fun.
"Come outside," he heard himself saying.
Mir tilted her head, those eyes gaining a slightly different perspective. Then he added,
"I have news."
And still naked, he walked to the bow, claiming a patch of the deck where he was close to Rococo. How much did he hate this man? Not nearly enough, he decided. But that didn't mean there weren't good reasons for what was going to happen. That's why Amund didn't wait for Mir to dress and join them. He looked at a face that never changed, and feeling a smile building, he told the face and the machine behind it,
"There's a new agreement, in place of that old lost treaty of yours. That's what I've been doing these last days."
The surprise seemed genuine, suspicions tagging along behind.
"A new agreement," the diplomat repeated. "But not for 4 worlds, Amund said. "I convinced the river to agree to give us full rights to both hot worlds and the original 2 ice moons, plus 12 other moons, and 1 gas giant, which is pretty useless in the short term, but maybe someday. And also, I've won the right for the colonists to bid on this system's Urt, if someday they ever want to do that."
Rococo opened his mouth. One word emerged.
"Good," he said. "It is."
Mir was clothed and emerging from the cabin. Amund continued.
"And by colonists, I mean humans, mortals, nothing but. This solar system is and will always be a sanctuary for Luddies, whether they're human or big ribbons of living gel."
Rococo said,
"Oh."
Then his natural poise took charge, and he said,
"Goddamn impressive, sir." Sir, he said. Mir was close, but the wind was blowing, and what could she hear?
Amund leaned against the man, his mouth next to Rococo's ear, and that was when he said,
Oh, and the river still needs its sacrifice, and she left it up to me to choose which one of us gets the honor.
11. Rococo was friendly with three former Luddies. A fourth was an out-and-out enemy, and there was a fifth Luddy who he met while she was still a child. Apparently, he made an impression, because 2 decades later, having decided to leave the faith, she asked this important immortal to accompany her to a facility that did nothing but transform her kind into his kind.
I want to live and live and live, she claimed, holding her companion's knee. But can I confess what scares me?
That you'll grow bored, Rococo said.
She was startled until she stepped outside herself. Then she laughed, admitting,
That's the cliché, I suppose. Lives always become tiresome, and 10,000 years leaves a girl empty and dull.
That's what some people want to believe, he said. But then again, Luddies need every reason to think themselves right, no matter how much of a lie that reason happens to be.
So you don't feel bored?
Rococo winked at her, and with a happy voice said, They won't tell you, the Luddies who want to keep you small.
But that thing you call boredom?
It doesn't exist. Not for my kind. Monotony and apathy are symptoms of a weak mind, not a condition that afflicts those with too much time. For us, life is furiously rich. With our memories and our big eye for detail, it's very difficult to keep us from being enthusiastically involved in every facet of the day. Every breath and good thought, and the little pains, too. Which are almost never large pains, by the way. Every circumstance is another fascinating element inside a grand parade that doesn't need to stop for any reason short of death.
His friend went through the necessary surgeries and rebirth, and unlike a few patients, she quickly adapted to her new state. And 50 years later, while Rococo was leading a distant mission, he received news that his friend died in a tragic accident involving plasmas and AI errors. The two of them were never lovers. Yet the woman was first in his thoughts that evening, and she stayed with Rococo throughout the sleepless night. Long stretches of conversation came to mind, word for word, and there were intervals where memory was far larger than the present. Once again, Rococo was sharing a drink with the perpetually young lady who was throwing her new cognitive skills at new languages and exotic faiths, all while touring exotic corners of the great ship. She was also making friends and then throwing the same friends aside when they proved to be the wrong sorts for a girl who was preparing for the next 1,000,000 years.
1,000,000 years, she said.
Night had reached its middle, and Rococo sat on the deck, in the open. Sometimes he looked at stars, sometimes down at his empty hands. But all he saw was a girl who was so thrilled, and standing on the edge of forever, and all she was asking from the universe was a brief 1,000,000 years. 3 times, Mir came to him in the night. The first 2 visits proved nothing but that the man didn't want to speak to her, regardless of what she said. But that didn't stop her from explaining that Amund was a shit. He was a shit who should have told them what was happening, even if the river forbade any warnings.
He could have used the Highland language to keep us ready. I learned enough words to follow the topic. If he had thought about doing that, which he would have, if the shit had ever bothered to try.
Shrugs didn't capture Rococo's indifference. Silently gazing at the back of his hands. That's what convinced her to walk away. 2 times. Somewhat more effective was the 3rd visit. With the sun rising behind them,
Mir sat on the deck, legs crossed, near enough to Rococo that they might bump knees. With a careful, quick voice, she said,
"Of course it's possible that everything is a lie."
He looked at her, looked away.
"About a sacrifice,"
she nodded.
"And he's the one who decides who."
This time, Mir glanced at her own hands. Waiting him out, apparently. Finally, Rococo said,
"I believe the man."
"Why?"
"Because I don't know him," he explained.
Face and mouth both asked,
"What do you mean?"
"I mean that if I did know the man, then I'd be able to yank the fabrications from the mouth. For instance, if I'd slept with the fellow, then I'd have a perspective. Then maybe I wouldn't feel as if I'm guessing about everything."
"Everything,"
she repeated.
"Including this alleged agreement," he said. "We don't know if this world has offered worlds to us, much less tossing us most of the solar system. And how can we be sure that Luddies are the only organisms that are welcome here? We have no details. We have nothing but words and posturing from a creature that you don't know either. Do you, Mir?"
"Not particularly well,"
she said. The sun was suddenly bright and wonderfully warm, baking into his flesh.
"All right," Rococo said.
Then after a long pause, he added,
"I'm going through the morning as a doomed man, all right? That's how I want to approach my last day, even if it isn't today. All right."
When they reached the ocean, the river had built itself into a towering blue-black wave. 500 meters above the surface of any normal river, they were being shoved forward so fast that their air blasted past them. But Rococo remained outside. Stress or habit was at play, or maybe the absence of imagination that comes with the gallows. The man could do nothing but watch the ocean retreating before the gelatin wall and before him. What wasn't calmness had come into him, or maybe this quiet had always been present, in secret. Being someone who was always loud or ready to become loud, he didn't know the tricks about lasting silence. But he was trying to learn. How much time remained? Don't calculate that. The best trick was to do nothing but sit and watch everything at once, committing nothing to memory because nothing was more useless now than fresh remembrances. Not for Rococo. Not anymore. Just sit still and merge with each breath and the glorious sight of salt water fleeing from a giant that was bearing him faster and faster toward their destination. There. The street ship was waiting exactly where it was expected, where it promised. Thick legs straddled an island that had sunk into the waves just from its terrific mass. Where the destroyed street ship had been minimal hyperfiber and maximum vacuum, this beast was a marvel of deep armor and utter indifference to its surroundings. It was a bright gray cone that could have hidden happily inside a mountain range. It was a machine that would welcome them and protect them, and if the resident AIs were tweaked just so, the ship would fall in love with each of them. Probably forever.
"What if Amund was lying?"
Rococo said to the wind or himself, or maybe no one. Maybe the wind was talking to him, or the river had marshaled the words, perfectly mimicking how Rococo sounded to himself. Either way, the hope was offered, and an instant later, it died. Amund never explicitly said, "I'll have you killed," because that was such an obvious answer. But what if the river and this world didn't think that Rococo was enough of a sacrifice? If these entities didn't approve of immortals, maybe Mir was on the platter too. Which meant that Amund could step alone into the street ship, and being the only surviving member of this awful mission, he would easily take charge. These ideas needed time to bake. Except there was no time. Rococo saw quite a lot, but most of his focus was on the gray cone trying to stand above the onslaught of flesh and vengeful rage. When he stood quickly, putting his back to the wind. The pack and kit were secured to the deck's middle. Rococo claimed both and entered his cabin, opened the pack, and gave instructions. Was this request too detailed? Too odd? Was he wasting valuable time? But no. Remoras had built the kit, and Remoras designed wondrous machines. A sculpture of pure carbon, the narrow diamond blade and an elaborate bone-shaped graphite hilt not meant to fit any human hand, but useful enough for a man about to commit murder. The street ship was minutes away, and the towering wave decided to slow itself, beginning a steady, graceful collapse. Rococo stepped inside Amun's cabin. Sitting on the mattress, legs too stiff to be crossed, the mortal body was wearing comfortable clothes without boots. For a moment, nothing happened. The man looked as if he might rise any moment, or he might close his eyes and nap. But then the Baltin ceremonial knife caught the sunlight, flashing like a beacon, and Amund responded with a sudden sound. A laugh, or perhaps something else. It could have been a sob, a muddled word, or maybe just some miserable noise escaping on its own. Rococo managed two steps before his legs quit working, before both hands failed him and the weapon struck the floor. Softly, one of them said, "Do what you want." Whose voice was that? Rococo wasn't certain, and he didn't care. What mattered was that he had done nothing wrong. He was bringing his colleague a fancy memento, and no crimes were being attempted. Nothing was behind him but an open door and sunshine. Except Rococo had said, "Do what you want."
"Thanks for the advice," the other man said. "I'll try to do just that."
Retreat began with a small step, then a pause. Embarrassment took hold, forcing Rococo to drop his eyes. Amund pulled in his legs and rose, both arms helping fight gravity. Then he stepped close, saying,
"You're the great diplomat, and so smart, too. If I believed half of what you've told me, I'd have no choice but to consider you one of the most brilliant creatures ever born from circuits and salt."
Rococo looked up, finding hard eyes and a broad grin that quickly turned into an ugly, disgusted expression.
"You're the genius," Amund said. "So of course you realized the truth. Probably long ago."
"What truth?"
"Well, that the rivers, and I mean all of the rivers, have been playing a spectacular game with us."
"Game?" Rococo muttered.
"Or don't you see it?"
Laughter bubbled out of him, but the man's expression remained cold, furious.
"When the rivers first learned about you, millions of tiny immortal machines riding inside one giant machine, they were afraid. Disasters were looming. Maybe like never before, they spoke to one another. They asked what they could do to save themselves. And after consideration and hard debate, they decided to send you promises. Four worlds offered, and three of those worlds were dedicated to the machines. Except they never wanted you on their shoreline. That's why they demanded someone like me. One pure river. And after a lot of hard, invisible preparations, they staged a terrible war between stubborn beliefs."
"Staged," Rococo echoed.
"Be honest," Amund said. "Bad as this damage looks, how many rivers were killed?"
"Zero."
"That's how many. Each creature is diminished, yes, but still enormous compared to little us. and when they attacked our ship, stripping our resources to a desperate minimum. But of course that should have bothered a genius like you. Against tremendous odds, you survived. So did I. We lived because that was the plan. And then the river spoke to me, which was the main reason why I was invited in the first place. To negotiate. Rococo had no voice. The rivers were hoping I'd settle for 4 worlds, the same as you did. But I saw the game and held out for quite a lot more. Which is why I have to thank you. Half of my life listening to you chatter about how great you were at your job, and I learned a few things. Stupid as I am, I still managed a treaty guaranteeing that these aliens will be surrounded by billions of pure rivers, but very few machines. Rococo couldn't remember his last breath. Through clenched teeth, he asked, "And I'll be the sacrifice?" "No, I am," Amund said instantly, without regrets. "I always have been. Aren't you paying attention?" Then he stepped close and bent just low enough to grab up the knife, holding it sideways on 2 flattened hands while addressing. "You're not the great diplomat. They pulled a con on you. From the start and without you suspecting. And here I am, the dreamy piece of water that saw what you couldn't even imagine." The knife weighed nothing, and the flesh offered no resistance when the tip went inside the man's stomach and out again. Amund collapsed, letting out a long scream. A tiny portion of the sunlight was blocked when Mir ran inside, grabbing Rococo's hands.
"What are you doing? Why would you?" she was asking. "How does this help anything, anyone, anywhere?"
She was carving up her own fingers, trying to yank the diamond blade free of his grip. But Rococo wouldn't let go. Feeling nothing and hearing nothing, his mind was focused only on the idea that if he was very good and very lucky, only 1 million years would have to pass before this woman would willingly touch him again. 12. 3 weeks after the streak ship launched, bound for the great ship, the AI doctors pronounced Amund well enough to travel. His stitches hadn't healed completely, and the scar tissue would never vanish. But those problems were bearable, and at least his guts were back where they belonged. Besides, there was too much to do. Amund was always the sacrifice. The one lie that he told was that he had any choice in this matter. But there wasn't going to be a staged event full of fake religious noise. The culmination of change and age and his own willingness to continue. That was why he would die. His flesh had nowhere to go but to join with the rivers, and these creatures were older and far more patient than any captain or clerk wandering long among the stars. Along with the AI doctors, Mir had left behind portions of the streak ship's machine shop and enough raw material to build a fleet of reasonably mindless devices. And following his instructions, a submarine was built and ready. The river still listened to him, but it wasn't talking back anymore. Which was understandable. Honestly, what more could be said at this point? Amund stepped inside the submarine and asked to be moved. No engines were necessary. The ship supplied breath and clear windows and spotlights. But those lights weren't needed. That was obvious soon after the river pulled him under the surf. The blue flesh of the land was replaced by glowing white flesh that lit the water and Amund's face and his great wide smile. The entire day was spent crossing the continental shelf, and then the edge came and the river set him where he could see the spectacle. A great current was crawling its way out of the depths, a waterfall flowing backward, milky and brilliant and vast. The world was shaking as the river pulled its reserves out of the abyssal plain. The first surge of an invasion that would rebuild the planet in less time than it would take this one man to die of old age. How many people were able to watch a new world made? Everybody could, of course. But at the end of the day, how many ever took notice?